This is Serenade Radio with the best in easy listening. Now here's Mark Stein with Stein's Song of the Week.
Do you know the name Harry Warren? He's not a household name, but he has a lot of household songs. For example,
come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway.
And
you'll never know just how much I miss you.
And
do you hear that whistle down the line? I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that'll sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
And that's just Harry Warren's Oscar winners. How about,
oh, jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those beepers? Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those eyes?
And
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I got a gal
in Kalamazoo.
And
when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
And they're just three of Harry Warren's Oscar nominees. How about
every kiss, every hug seems to act just like a drug. You're getting to be a habit with me.
And
well, baby, what I couldn't do with plenty of money and you, in spite of the worry that money brings, just a little filthy lucre buys a lot of things.
And
you must have been a beautiful baby, you must have been a wonderful child. When you were only starting to go to kindergarten, I bet you drove the little boys wild.
And
the leaves of brown came tumbling down, remember, in September, in the rain.
And
I had the craziest dream last night. Yes, I do.
And that's just a handful of Harry Warren's dozens of number one songs. In the 20s, he composed big Tin Pan Alley pop hits.
Back in Nagasaki, where the fellas chew tobacco and the women wicky-wacky woo.
In the 30s, he wrote the first of four Great American Train songs.
I'll go home and pack my panties, you go home and get your scanties, and away we'll go.
In the 40s, he came up with the song that earned Glenn Miller the world's first gold record.
Pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga juju?
Yes, yes, track 29.
Boy, you can give me a shine.
In the 50s, it was all about nutty novelty songs, and he adapted.
Sing, sing, sing a little song with me.
Sing a little song.
I know we're not beside the side.
And I'll be glad to sing along.
But when you're sitting by the side of me,
you want a what?
I want to sing a little song.
In the 60s, Harry Warren gave Chris Montez his biggest hit.
The more I see you, the more I want you. This feeling just grows and grows.
In the 70s, Harry Warren gave Art Garfunkel his biggest hit.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. I only have eyes for you, dear.
In the 80s, Harry Warren's score gave Broadway its only real homegrown hit on an otherwise thoroughly Lloyd Webberized Great White Way.
Come and meet those dancing feet on the avenue I'm taking you to, 42nd Street.
And in the 90s, His big orchestral theme from An Affair to Remember did most of the heavy lifting for Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks in Sleepless in Seattle. And in the new century, Harry Warren provided the first song President and Mrs. Obama danced to at the inaugural ball. Beyoncé sings Harry Warren, just like Garfunkel and Sinatra, Crosby and Jolson, the Buffalo Bills, and the Epana Troubadours all did. And we haven't even mentioned.
Gotta get my old tuxedo dress, gotta sew a button on my vest, cause tonight I've got to look my best, to look back in time.
Or
there will be other songs to sing, another fall, another spring, but there will never be another you.
Oh,
it was a lucky April shower, it was a most convenient dawn. I found $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store.
What a wonderfully evocative slice of Americana that is. But as I said, we don't have time to mention it. Between 1935 and 1950, Harry Warren had 42 top 10 hits. The only other composer to come close was Irving Berlin, far behind, with 33. But everyone knows Irving, and no one knows Harry. You could understand why, during the latter stages of the Second World War, Harry Warren would occasionally remark, "They bombed the wrong Berlin." ASCAP, the Society for Composers and Lyricists, had a big gala for its star writers at Lincoln Center in New York. And as Harry Warren recalled, "I arrived in a tuxedo at the door and the fellow stopped me. He didn't stop the other people, he stopped me. He said to me, 'Where are you going?' I said, 'Where the hell do you think I'm going?' That's the story of my life." Literally, on the very first record of a Harry Warren song recorded by the Biltmore Society Orchestra in 1922, I'm looking at the 78 right now, Vocalion 14457, they left his name off the label. Biltmore Society Orchestra and the very first recording of Rose of the Rio Grande, which according to the label is by Gorman, Clark and Leslie. Grant Clark and Edgar Leslie wrote the lyric, not a word of which is heard on this record. Ross Gorman was a phenomenal clarinetist. That's his famous glissando on the original Paul Whiteman version of Rhapsody in Blue, but he didn't contribute much beyond his celebrated name to Rose of the Rio Grande. The fellow who composed this tune is the only guy they forgot to put on the label. As Harry Warren said, story of my life.
Thank you.
So why isn't Harry Warren a household name? Well, for a start, too many households already have his name or something similar pinned on their mailboxes. Whereas, how many Gershwins do you know? Or come to that, Hammersteins. Harry Warren was born Salvatore Guaranga in Brooklyn on Christmas Eve, 1893. And you can't help thinking he'd have been better off sticking with that. But by the time Tootie, as he was known to his parents and siblings, started school, the family name had been Americanized to Warren, and Salvatore was registered in class as Harry. Nothing to stop him changing it again, of course, yet he didn't. But there's another reason why he didn't become famous. Years ago, I asked Alan J. Lerner, author of My Fair Lady and Camelot, why some composers and lyricists were known to the public, Lerner and Lowe, Rodgers and Hart, and others, like Harry Warren, weren't. And Alan said, well, they know the writers who write for the theatre, because the theatre is a writer's medium. You go to see the new play by so-and-so. But film is a director's medium and a star's medium, and so that's why the public doesn't know the songwriters in Hollywood. Harry Warren started in Tin Pan Alley, but dreamed of crossing the tracks to Broadway. Then Wall Street crashed and put a lot of theatre producers out of business at exactly the same time Hollywood was converting to talking pictures. For New York songwriters in 1929, it was a second California gold rush. That year, Harry Warren was summoned to Los Angeles by Warner Brothers to write some additional songs for the film Spring Is Here. But he missed Manhattan, so he got the first train back and with Ira Gershwin wrote some songs for a Broadway review.
There's a cheerful little earful, gosh, I miss it, something fearful. And this cheerful little earful is the well-known I love you. Stocks can go down, business slow down, but the milk and honey flow down. With a cheerful little earful of the well-known I love you. In every play it's a set phrase, what the public get praise, but as a pet phrase, it'll do, do, do. Poo-poo-roo it, soft and cue it, make me happy, you can do it. With a cheerful little earful of the well-known I love you.
That was a hit song for Harry Warren and Ira Gershwin, but Ira and his brother George got the Broadway offers and Harry didn't. So it was back to Hollywood and with a new lyricist. Al Dubin was born in Zurich, but by the time Harry Warren took up with him, looked like a parody of a Tin Pan Alley man, a big, big cigar chomper of a guy. They met over cheesecake at Lindy's on Broadway. Al was a large man with an enormous appetite, said Warren. He loved good food. He spent a lot of time seeking out restaurants. And that wasn't as easy as it sounds in the Los Angeles of 1930. The railway station was a wooden building, Warren recalled, and there were very few places to eat. Hollywood looked to me like a small town in South Dakota. But their first film was a smash, even if it was all about the Broadway Harry Warren had left behind.
200 beautiful girls were picked from more than 5,000 applicants for work in these amazing chorus ensembles. Luxurious settings, spectacular dance routines, set to the rhythm of inspiring music, in scenes never before attempted on stage or screen. These flashes give you but a brief glimpse into the production of 42nd Street. But to appreciate the bigness of the picture, the tenderness of the story, the dramatic scenes enacted by its many stars, the power and gripping suspense of the entire production, you must see it for yourselves. It is one of the most dramatic stories ever screened. Glorious, thrilling, and unforgettable.
Come and meet those dancing feet on the avenue I'm taking you to.
42nd Street. And after 42nd Street came Gold Diggers of 1933 and Footlight Parade and Dames. And in Nothing Flat, Harry Warren and Al Dubin were the hottest team in town. even if the town was Hollywood and one of them couldn't stand it. Al and I were always arguing about the relative merits of New York and Hollywood, said Harry. I still hated it out here and talked all the time about New York.
Say, folks, how about a little toast to our pal Harry Warren, one of the finest songwriters that ever lived?
I think you ought to make a speech.
Just a minute. Speech-making isn't my racket at all.
When you sit right down and say it with music.
Give!
Well, I need a dough, I don't need maybe. The wolf was parked outside my door. And so I wrote the $1 million baby from the 5 and 10 cent store.
You got lots of silver linings.
Nobody troubles them anymore.
Still, you'll always find me dining at the 5 and 10 cent store.
So Warren and Dubin are assigned a picture called Gold Diggers of 1935. You want to know the plot? Well, it's something about a summer resort where Dick Powell's the penniless desk clerk and Gloria Stewart's the heiress he's in love with, and Adolphe Manjou is a maverick Russian impresario staging a charity show at the joint. Don't worry about it. Don't let it discombobulate you. What matters are the Warren and Dubin songs. Harry Warren had written a tune with no words, no title, no clear idea of what it would be about or how it would be used in the film. But he gave it to Al Dubin, and a few days later he got a call. "I know how you still miss New York," Dubin told him. "And this song is just for you. Come on down and I'll show it to you." So Warren drove down to Malibu and Dubin showed him the lyric. A Valentine to the New York Harry Warren missed so much.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of the subway train, the rattle of the taxis, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Maxine's, when the Broadway baby says goodnight. It's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night. Milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby, sleep tight. Let's call it a day, hey. Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hidey-high and poop-a-doo, the lullaby of Broadway. The band begins to go to town and everyone goes crazy. You rock by your baby round till everything gets hazy. Hush, I'll buy you this and that, you'll hear a daddy saying. And baby goes home to her flat to sleep all day. Good night, baby. Good night. Milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Let's call it a day. Listen to the lullaby of old Broadway.
The rumble of a subway train, the rattle of the taxis, all the hip hooray and ballyhoo of the New York that Harry Warren pined for. Isn't that hip hooray and ballyhoo a terrific line? For a guy born in Switzerland, Al Dubin certainly mastered fluent American. Harry Warren loved it, which is more than Jack Warner did when Harry played it for him at the studio. The tune was okay, but not all that lullaby of Broadway stuff. Tell Al to write a new lyric, Warner ordered. And for the first time in his life, the famously shy Mr. Warren put his foot down. "I'll write you a new song," he said, "but I won't divorce this lyric from this melody." So the song stayed. In Gold Diggers of 1935, it's used for a kind of film within a film, a self-contained sequence that goes on forever and ever. Here's the Broadway baby's flat. Here's the sugar daddy saying goodnight. Milkman's on his way. No, wait, Milkman's here.
Good night, baby. Good night.
Milkman's on his way.
Sleep tight, baby.
Sleep tight.
I'll call it a day.
Hey.
If you watch those Warner Brothers pictures from the early 30s, most of the plots were the usual backstage yarn, so the songs were generally performed as songs from a show the characters were rehearsing or auditioning for or going along to see. The curtain would rise and someone would start to sing, and next thing you know, there'd be hundreds of dancers and vast Art Deco sets stretching back into the distance, and huge geometric patterns of underdressed Coreens on lily pads opening and shutting their legs like novelty nutcrackers, all filmed by Busby Berkeley from overhead. And of course, no real theatre stage, even in the biggest house on Broadway, can offer anything like that. Yet with Lullaby of Broadway, Busby Berkeley determined to surpass anything he'd done before. He was the most literal of directors. If you wrote By a Waterfall, he showed you the waterfall, which seems reasonable. If you wrote I Only Have Eyes for You, he showed you hundreds of eyes and dozens of lookalikes of the you, which seems a little weirder. So for Lullaby of Broadway, he created a vignette drawn from one Al Dubin quatrain. When a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. My old BBC pal, Russell Davis, called it the noisiest lullaby in motion picture history. But that's the point. It's a lullaby for the city that doesn't sleep. It's a simple, swinging tune full of rhythmic energy and repeated notes. And only after 24 bars of musical partying does Harry Warren give us anything approximating a lullaby. Back to the party. Busby Berkeley staged it with Winnie Shaw and Dick Powell and hundreds of unrelenting tapping dancers in a demented expressionist nightclub located somewhere at the top of a midtown skyscraper. If you read your French intellectual cinéastes, you'll know they like to compare Buzz Berkeley's regimented, dehumanized choruses with Leni Riefenstahl filming a Nuremberg rally. But that's not true here. The accelerating frenzy seems very natural. The sequence is an amazing synthesis of music, drama, Berkeley's choreography, George Barnes's photography. There's nothing like it.
A table for two, a lady divine, a rhapsody blue, a bottle of wine. Then you'll listen to a siren song. Come and shuffle along.
Come and dance.
My sweetie may not let me.
Come and dance.
Why don't you come and get me?
On that scream, a Broadway baby's night out ends not with Winnie Shaw calling it a day, but sleeping the big sleep as she plunges from the nightclub window, high atop Rockefeller Center or some such, to the pavement below. Wow.
Come on along and listen to a lullaby of Broadway, a mighty high and blue-blue, a lullaby of Broadway.
And so the cycle begins again. New babies, new sugar daddies, and the bit that always gets me. The only one who really loves Winnie Shaw is the cat in the apartment house hallway. Because when the milkman dropped off the bottle, she always filled Kitty's saucer. And now the cat is pining for a saucer of milk from a Broadway baby who'll never be back. It's a production number, but underneath the sets and the extras and the choreography is a great song. The Dorsey Brothers had a number one hit with it in 1935, and then came the Andrews Sisters, Doris Day, Tony Bennett, Peggy Lee, and eventually in the 70s, somewhat improbably, the Winnie Shaw original, direct from the soundtrack of the movie, made the UK top 10. Yet Lullaby of Broadway's greatest moment was still to come. In 1980, at the very end of his life, Harry Warren, a very reluctant Californian, finally had the blockbuster Broadway hit he'd wanted half a century earlier. Gower Champion and David Merrick took the old film of 42nd Street, ransacked the rest of the Warren and Dubin catalogue, and got a genuine gold-plated New York stage smash out of it. The plot's the same as the movie, and Neophyte gets her big break on the Great White Way. You're going out there a youngster, but you've got to come back a star. But there are complications along the way, and at one point little Peggy Sawyer determines that show business isn't for her and she's going back to Hicksville. And as the craze-driven director Julian Marsh attempts to persuade her otherwise, he delivers the ultimate song cue, and one that, by the time it works up to quote the most glorious words in the English language, sums up the entire cockamamie genre.
Now listen, Sawyer, and listen good. Even if you don't give a damn about me, think of all those kids you'll be throwing out of work if you don't do this. Think of the songs that will wither and die if you don't get up there and sing them. Think of the costumes that will never be seen, the scenery never seen, the orchestrations never heard. Think of our show and the thrill and pleasure it could give to millions. Think of musical comedy, the most glorious words in the English language. Sawyer, think of Broadway, damn it! Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hip hooray and ballyhoo. The lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of the subway train. The rattle of the taxis, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Maxie's.
A song from me to you, Jerry Orbach, in the original Broadway production of 42nd Street, singing music by Harry Warren and words by Al Dubin, a big town Valentine from the latter to the former, because the one understood that the other would never stop missing the hip hooray and ballyhoo of New York. And almost half a century later, it finally became the bona fide Broadway showstopper he'd longed for all his life. Oh, and just one very Harry Warren footnote. In 1980, when he came from California to New York for the opening of 42nd Street, he discovered that the poster had the producer's name at the top and the director's at the bottom and a showgirl in between, which meant there was no room, as usual, for his name. And that's Broadway.
Listen to the lullaby of old.
Stein's Song of the Week was presented by Mark Stein and produced for Serenade Radio by Brian Savin.